Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
They're irrepressible, they're unstoppable, they are the Vigilant, and this week on the 2000 AD Thrillcast, we talk to the writer behind The Vigilant Legacy, which is the new issue in this ongoing shared universe based around the IPC archive, Simon Furman, who many people will know from his work on Transformers in the 1980s and his work for Marvel UK. But this is the universe-spanning shared universe, which launched last year and uses some of the many, many, many characters that we inherited from IPC. And it's a pleasure to chat to Simon about the series, about what his plans are for it, how it came together, and what the different elements within the strip are, and kind of rebooting all these characters alongside Simon Colby, Jake Lynch and Will Sliney. So it's a cracker of an issue and is out now from Morgan Newsagent's comic book stores and digitally from our 2000 AD web shop and apps. And in case you haven't seen the announcement, we've announced the schedule of events for the Day of Dread on the 7th of September, a chance to celebrate and explore the legacy of one of the world's most iconic comic book characters. We've got signings across the UK. We've got signings in the USA. We've got things happening online. We've got art jams. We've got exhibitions. Going to be a great day, and we hope you will join us at one of these events. If you can't, join us online as we celebrate the legacy and the future of the greatest lawman of Mega City One. If you need details, go on to 2080.com/news and you'll find all the details there. And don't forget, we want to know what you think about the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Drop us a line on Thrillcast, all one word, at 2000AD.com. That's Thrillcast at 2000AD.com. Some good suggestions coming in already from people. One or two we can't do, but it's lovely to hear what people think. And don't be afraid to leave us a 5-star, if you please, review on the podcast app of your choice, whether it's iTunes. We're now on Spotify or any of the others. It's always good to see people appreciate the podcast. And it was wonderful to hear at San Diego Comic-Con some really nice compliments. So thank you to everybody who dropped by the booth and said nice things to me. I definitely didn't blush. Anyway, let's crack on with The Vigilant Legacy. And it was a pleasure and a privilege as somebody who grew up reading Transformers comics to speak to Simon Furman about bringing back some of the greatest heroes from the legacy of British comics. We didn't have you on the podcast to talk about the first issue of The Vigilant last year. Tell us a little bit about the genesis of the project, because Keith Richardson, the editor on this, this is a bit of a passion project for him. So tell us how about you came on board and it all sort of came together.
Yeah, well, Keith kind of contacted me fairly out of the blue, really, and just asked whether I wanted to meet up and talk about, you know, an exciting possibility for some work. And obviously I was keen and interested to hear what he had to say. And when, you know, it came out that it was involving the characters I'd kind of grown up reading in, you know, Lion and Buster and all these other comics, it was just that, wow, this is, you know, dream project for me. So, you know, so often I've had, you know, the Transformers creators now who say, well, you know, I grew up reading your stuff and so it's a thrill to work on it. I kind of suddenly understood how they felt, you know. These were iconic characters to me, and really they were my sort of, as well as the Marvel comics, they were my staple, you know, formative stuff. So all these characters that Keith was talking about suddenly were things I read, knew about. Up in the loft still had, you know, a big stack of Lion comics. And so, you know, suddenly over a lunch, we were just talking about all these crazy, kooky characters that, you know, a lot of people, I suppose, maybe had even forgotten about, but were still very present for both of us. So, you know, really quickly, we just saw that we were both on the same page with things. And Keith had kind of come to me because he'd read things like Dragon's Claws and Death's Head that I'd done. And he liked that sort of slight anarchic feel that they had, you know, sort of the, you know, and the very sort of, you know, action led but characterful as well. So, you know, he sort of thought I was a good fit for it.
Mm.
And once we started talking, I think we both thought I was a good fit for it, just because, you know, I knew a lot of this stuff going in.
Tell us a little bit about your experience with these characters, because we're drawing in for the Vigilant characters from across, I guess, the IPC universe, if we can call it that, but to a certain extent quite disparate characters as well, because the notion of a shared universe wasn't really something that was there originally.
Yeah, it did present a challenge because, you know, obviously something like the Steel Commando existed not only in a different, you know, universe, but a different time, you know, space as well. And, you know, the Leopard from Lime Street didn't have, seem to have much to do with a sort of strange mystical old guy called Dr. Sin. And yes, you're right, they were very disparate elements. Death Wish was very much its own strip, you know. But, you know, I've always loved that. You know, I always loved the connectivity of the Marvel Universe. So doing this to those British characters and joining some of the dots, or saying, well, look, you know, this isn't even the same character, but we're going to take the spirit of that character into a new person with that name, such as Dr. Sin or Thunderbolt, and just make them work together, really. You know, the Leopard very much was, you know, existed in and around Cellbridge. So we never really saw whether there was a wider world very much with him. So it didn't seem a big leap to say, well, no, these, there were other places with other heroes. And, you know, we rationalized the Steel Commando that he's, you know, he's put on ice for a while after World War II. And just generally, it didn't seem as big an ask as we thought it might be to make these characters gel in the same space.
Well, something I wanted to specifically ask about was rebooting characters, because you mentioned the Leopard from Lime Street there. Rob Williams had sort of rebooted Dr. Sin and made him a young rapper. That's possibly making me sound about 10 decades older than I actually am. But is there a certain degree where you have to be sensitive to what comes before when rebooting a character, when placing them into, as you say, an environment in which they were alien to previous?
Yeah, I think we had a sort of balancing act all the way through the Vigilant, because, you know, these were iconic characters to me and Keith as well, and we didn't really want to mess with them. But, you know, some of them just felt like they needed a more of just a sort of coat of paint, you know. So the Leopard maybe just needed aging up a little bit and toughening up a bit, and some of the more sort of goofy aspects of his costume toned down a little bit or made more relevant. But other characters like Dr. Sin felt, well, there wasn't really much of the original Dr. Sin to start with. It's only a one story that we had. So it didn't feel we were tampering too much to make him a grandson and very different in you know, the approach we were taking to him. And a lot of that hard work and heavy lifting had already been done when I came on board. It was good for me just to have that, well, there it is, that's Dr. Sin, and I wasn't that familiar with the original, so it didn't have any problem with me. And making, and just generally without sort of ticking boxes, we did want to make the Vigilant a more, you know, fit for purpose team. You know, I didn't really, it needed to be more balanced. British heroes back in the day were fairly white male, and that was about it, you know, with a few exceptions. So we did want more of a balance in the team, and it felt right to take a character like Thunderbolt, again, in and say, well, look, this is the original character, but all we're doing is we're taking the watch, which was the sort of MacGuffin, really, that made him Thunderbolt, and giving it to someone from his universe. So again, we stayed true to it. We didn't just put a random person. You know, Mary Lanson was from that original strip. So it was all done with all the right connectivity to the originals, but, you know, some of them just needed a fresh coat of paint, whereas someone like Blake Edmonds just didn't. He did more or less just cross straight over into the Vigilant.
Mm. When you're dealing with legacy characters, but you're introducing them to a new audience, and when there's a lot of them as well, I mean, in this issue of the Vigilant, there are 8 primary characters. How do you balance people's nostalgic expectations with an audience that probably has never read these characters before?
Yeah, it had to be reasonably entry level. I mean, the first issue, the first Vigilant, came with a very nice who all these characters are, you know, introduction before you even got into the story, which freed us up a little bit just to launch straight in. But, you know, one of the things we felt, you know, just through space constraints, we didn't get to do with the first issue was kind of go behind the mask in the story itself. So we made space in this next one, in Legacy, to be able just to sort of take our foot off the accelerator a little bit and have a look at some of these people in their quote-unquote ordinary lives and give it a bit more context that way, so that new readers and old readers get that sense of, oh yeah, these are real characters. They're not just, you know, they're not just the costume. They are Billy Farmer, they are Blake Edmonds, you know. And so it gave us a little more room for that. But I think fundamentally we wanted just to say, here they are, you know, a bunch of not always play well together characters, you know, who have been lumped together by someone who doesn't even really sort of feel he knows enough to be in charge of them. So, you know, it felt like a sort of a nice, easy way in that it's a team, but, you know, I think Keith and I always likened it to the Defenders, where characters may come and go. You know, it was a very loose assemblage rather than something as structured as the Avengers had been in the Marvel universe. So we just wanted it to keep it flexible so that people can drop out. There are clashes. Sometimes new members are drafted in. You know, it was such a wealth of characters to choose from. I think we just wanted that flexibility.
Something you mentioned there really struck a chord, because particularly with characters such as the Leopard of Lime Street, and you've already mentioned this, but there was a localism about them, almost a parochialism. They were very local. They were ordinary. Their lives were not extraordinary in of themselves. Is that something that you've tried to, in those moments of quiet, try to keep these characters grounded like they were in the original comics?
Yeah, I think so. We always tried with the Leopard in the first one and this one to sort of suggest that he's happier just doing what he does on a more local street level basis. You know, I don't think he wants to be part of the Vigilant. I think he's drafted in, but he doesn't see it as he doesn't see himself as a natural fit in a team world shattering threat level group. I think he always sees himself more as still that somewhat neighborhood crime fighter. And yeah, we've tried to keep that vibe going, that, you know, of all of them, he's probably the most of a square peg in a round hole, that he doesn't feel comfortable in the team setup. He doesn't feel comfortable almost with the sort of, you know, the mystical, magical side of the whole thing. You know, he's very, you know, grounded. And so, yeah, we've tried to keep that moving through. And, you know, there's a nice little nod to Selbridge and his sort of backstory from the original strip in this second issue.
You've got some fantastic villains to play with, because if there's one thing British comics did, it was create these wonderful personalities such as Von Hoffman, who goes the Nazi scientist who just really liked making big insects to attack small British towns, and Dr. Mesmer as well, of course, from Dr. Mesmer's Revenge. Is it easy to kind of make them very overblown, almost like kind of 1930s kind of over-the-top villain horror types?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, you know, the great thing about the, you know, IPC Fleetway strips is often they would make villains the title character. You know, it would be their strip. There might be someone trying to stop them, but largely it was their story. Von Hoffman, Mesmer, you know, the White Eyes. It was very much about the villains themselves. And I think that was great because it made them the characters rather than just the foil to someone else. And I think, you know, they are larger than life, but, you know, they're still very rooted in the things that they wanted from those strips originally. You know, Von Hoffman, you know, he wants immortality. He wants to live forever. Mesmer is really all about his artifacts and his ancient Egyptian, you know, connections, and his, and so we wanted that just to be there still. And, you know, we've subtly linked Von Hoffman and Mesmer in this second issue with a kind of suggestion that almost the spur for the whole of Dr. Mesmer's Revenge is rooted in something that we didn't see at the time and only now is being revealed. And I think that's something else we keep trying to bring to the Vigilant, that we're going to subvert things as well. We're true to the source material, but maybe we didn't see everything back then. Maybe we didn't know everything back then. And maybe some of the things that were set up, like in Thunderbolt the Avenger, do we know everything about this watch? I mean, it sounded preposterous in the original strip, but maybe that's the point. You know, Alan Moore did it so well with Marvel Man, Miracle Man. You know, the actual early strips, he didn't want to throw them out, but he was aware that for a 1980s audience, it kind of wouldn't wash as did. So he just turned everything on its head so cleverly. And again, we've tried to do a little of that here and just say, well, yes, that was preposterous because it's not really the case. And so, you know, once we start to learn slightly more about Thunderbolt's watch and what it means, where it comes from in this issue, and we loop Pete and the little ones into that. So, you know, it's just, again, building that out of costume connectivity between the characters.
There's just so many wonderful gimmicks to the characters from the IPC archive. You know, Pete's pocket army. You've got the leopard. Even sort of the slightly grimmer ones like Blake Edmonds in Death Wish. What's your favourite? What would be one of the characters if they're not in the Vigilant that you would like to get your hands on and do something different with?
Oh, I mean, obviously this second issue starts off with a whole other Vigilant team. Mm. And, you know, of course it was just like, oh, wow, you know, can we put these characters in? But how do we do that? We've got a very crowded issue, 8 members of the team anyway. So we just came up with this whole contrivance of having been an original team called the Vigilant, led by the original Dr. Sin, which gave it a nice sense of continuity as well. And everything is then wrapped into this overarching story of the Blood Rapture that is not a one-off, but is going to keep happening again and again, and they have to keep stopping it. So there's always the need for the Vigilant. But yes, it gave us that opening 5 pages that Will Sliney drew, you know, and, you know, almost stand alone as their own little bit of the issue. you know, gave us the chance to feature some of these other classic characters like Robot Archie and, you know, Tim Kelly of Kelly's Eye. So, you know, these were, again, characters I was just itching to get a hold of and use. And I hope that as we roll onwards, we can do more featuring those characters, maybe that original Vigilant team.
There's a lot to pack into a few pages, and obviously we've been doing these as an annual event as opposed to something that's monthly. As the writer, what's the pressure to make sure that A, people are reminded of what's gone before, but also that those who've not necessarily read issue one or perhaps, you know, read it a long time ago, forgotten what's in it, are able to pick up the narrative thread, particularly when you've got so many characters?
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, you know, in an ideal world, a kind of tighter frequency of these things would be brilliant, you know, because it is a continuing story. But yes, so it does create a pressure, if you like, to make the issues also reasonably self-contained. So the first issue had more of the, you know, the story was about Adam Eterno. This one is more about the sludge and, you know, what's going on in that sort of strand of the story. But laced through it still is this overarching what von Hoffman is trying to do, achieve, leading to this thing called the Blood Rapture that we're teasing and hinting about, but not really explaining in any great detail. So it's a tough one. You know, the frequency of, well, nearly a year between issues is a tough one to maintain that sense of continuity. But, you know, we're trying as best we can to make it reasonably self-contained, but these still will be, you know, we hope when the next one rolls around, three, you know, make one sort of big chunk of story.
For you, what's the value in bringing these characters back? Because you've already mentioned Alan Moore's work on Miracle Man / Marvel Man, and of course he did Albion a number of years ago. And even with something like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, he's churning through all these references from sort of the past 100 years, 150 years. So, what's the value of not only bringing these characters back, but actually engaging with them again, not as a kind of throwaway element in a meta narrative?
Yeah, I think they're sort of fundamental to the whole British side of comics. You know, they are the heritage of this. I think they're important, and important enough not to leave mouldering in a filing cabinet or just being the preserve of collected editions for the people who grew up with them. I think they deserve a new audience. They deserve a fresh coat of paint made more relevant. And just it keeps that going. It says, look, you know, as much as American comics have all this rich history, so do we. And we have our cast of characters, and making them interconnected now makes it seem even more cohesive. And I think that's the responsibility. It's to bring in new readers. It's not just to appeal to, you know, the people like me who grew up with the characters, but to make them relevant, make them interesting, and just generally say, this is it. This is our comics, our British comics heritage.
One of the elements that always struck me about the stuff in the archive, and this was mentioned on the panel that we did recently at San Diego, was how working class so many of the stories and so many of the heroes were, even into the kind of girls' comics, strips like Bella at the Bar, which is essentially a story of child abuse. They, as you said, they are very grounded. When you're kind of upgrading these characters into a kind of pseudo Marvel interconnected universe kind of thing, Is there a risk that you can lose that grounding, that you can lose that sense of the ordinary within the characters themselves?
Yeah, I think there obviously is that. You know, a teen book is more difficult to have that, I suppose, enough of the characters themselves. You know, when you're dealing with eight different characters, it's tough to do more than a little bit of character development, a little bit here. And we've tried a little bit with Legacy to put them back into their respective worlds and say, you know, this is what they are like. You know, they are grounded, they are working class, they are rooted in the real, in a far more real world than sometimes I felt that the American heroes were. You know, it's more, I don't know, gritty, somewhat dark, you know, and I think we've tried to do that a little, but you are forever saying that really the story, and I think what people will want is, you know, the bigger sort of grand storyline that's running through it. But yeah, we do try and pepper that in to keep it rooted if at all possible. And so, yeah, you know, often it's just locations. You know, there's, you know, the opening battle against the Sludge happens in Birmingham, and, you know, right in the sort of Bullring, and you know, the opening with the first Vigilant is Salisbury Plain, and it's always, I think, bringing it back somewhat to, you know, really recognizable ground level locations, and it helps sort of root the fantastical elements more.
Because you've got form with kind of interconnected universes, because of course the Transformers bled into Death's Head, which then kind of bled into Doctor Who at one point. And then you had the kind of Marvel UK interconnected universe. Does each of these circumstances, each of these situations demand sort of different things? So it's not as easy as just kind of jamming a load of characters together and seeing what shakes out. Is it just the way that you treat them is kind of based on who they are and what they are? So there's not a formula to doing a teen book, is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think there is. And I think, you know, even Marvel, you know, they've always sort of done different kinds of team books. And I, you know, I was always a big fan of their Defenders idea, because the sort of the roster came and went and people drifted off, or they were just brought in for an issue. And I like that fluidity of it. And I think that's the sort of the more laid back attitude we want to the Vigilant, that these characters are called together when they're needed. They're not always the same characters each time, you know, other ones are drafted in. And I think it's just that sense of it's a much wider world than we're even seeing here. And, you know, there were tiny little vignettes in the first issue of more heroes, other characters that Dr. Sin could call upon if need be. And I think it's just, we didn't want it too sort of rigid. We wanted it just this sense that there is a whole world of characters out there that we can maybe draw upon, drop into a Vigilant story. So just keeping that framework loose felt that it immediately made it more a sort of bigger universe of characters.
Let's talk about the artwork a little bit, because you've got Simon Colby, the main artist on the strip, but also you're joined in this issue by Jake Lynch, who readers of Judge Dredd will recognise, and Will Sliney, who's better known for his work for American comics, let's put it that way. What do you think the different styles, or first off, what's your relationship like with Cy Colby? Because, you know, this is a really quite a big undertaking to reboot these characters, to put them into a shared believable universe.
Yeah, I mean, I know Cy Colby from ways back when we, you know, he drew some of my sort of early Transformer stories, or certain actually some of the, my later Marvel UK Transformer stories. So, you know, we'd worked together before. We hadn't worked together for a while, but in the nature of the British comics biz, you bump into people. And so, you know, we knew each other well enough. But, you know, with this one, it was very much a case of, you know, I knew his stuff enough to say, well, look, you know, I can take sort of no real part in any kind of redesign, rethink for these characters, because that's over to you. And Simon didn't disappoint. You know, he sort of did that nice thing of roughening up the characters a little bit, you know, updating them, sure, but just taking that somewhat, you know, with the leopard, say, he cut away all the somewhat silly aspects of the costume and made it more of just a sort of purpose-built thing for now. So, you know, I just immediately trusted Simon, and you know, he hasn't disappointed. So we've had a very easy run working together, because, you know, with very few exceptions, you know, what I write, he draws, and he draws it amazingly. So, you know, we've slotted very quickly into a, what I call a good sort of, without using that word, synergy, a good synergy when we're working.
I really like the way that the leopard's been done, because, of course, leopard print is a form of camouflage. So it kind of makes sense that urban camouflage can evolve in you know, a synergistic way with it, kind of thing.
I mean, we had a little bit of fun in Legacy with the costume, because, you know, Simon with the first issue went quite sort of full on, you know, militaristic with it, whereas, you know, we thought that maybe was somewhat removed from that essential essence of the character we were talking about. So we almost made it part of the plot for issue two, that there's something of a falling out over the costume and a slight tweak to that that puts the leopard in a slightly more classic outfit. So, you know, it's an evolving process, but it was nice that we could actually make, you know, some character element out of that.
And with the work that Will Sliney has done on the kind of, it's like a prequel, really, isn't it? It's dealing with the previous Vigilant. Different style altogether, a lot more, I suppose you'd say, kind of classic superhero style.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I think it was really good. And it was really good. I always think those ones where you're going to do a almost prequel moment set 20 years before, to take it out of that art style of the modern day really helps differentiate it. And I just thought it was really, you know, fun to see a different take on it. And, you know, and obviously the first issue had an assortment of artists doing backup stories, and we only just had the one in this. So in a way, instead of a backup story, we just had a little prequel story, which, if it had been a self-contained thing, would have been a different artist anyway. So it just seemed to work for that. And I just think Will did an amazing job. You know, that sort of double page spread is just amazing.
Let's talk about the future, because obviously this is an ongoing story, and without giving too many spoilers away about what you're intending, what's next for the Vigilant?
I think the next, we really want to, we don't want to sort of, especially if this frequency is going to be, you know, anything from 6 months to a year, we don't want to drag things out. So I think very much we're going to get to the Blood Rapture and bring that to some kind of conclusion. You know, whether it's over one or two issues, we're not quite sure yet, but certainly we don't want to just, you know, even if it was a regular three-issue series, you'd want some kind of conclusion, or four-issue series. So we are building, we don't want to sort of just drag this on and on. You know, we've been building to this Blood Rapture, and we sort of darn well want to get to it next issue. So that's pretty much going to be where we're going. But as ever with the Vigilant, we want there to be more to it than that. So, you know, while we're doing that, we want to seed other storylines. You know, leave certain things open for future stories, you know, maybe change the roster up a bit, you know, maybe even bring back the original Vigilant team. We don't really know what happened to them at the end of the prequel. So it's going to be, you know, interesting to see where we go next, but it will reach some kind of conclusion within the next sort of issue or two, whichever, depending on how frequently we can get those out.
Is there a character from the archive that you remember or you looked at and you thought, this one isn't redeemable? We can't. You know, as much as it would be interesting to bring them back, there's no way to retcon, there's no way to reboot and slot them in.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's any such beast. I think you can look at any of those characters in a modern sense, with a modern sensibility, and say, well, that's a little preposterous. That's, you know, I don't think that would work. But the challenge is making that work, making it relevant, making it something it maybe wasn't on the surface back then. So, no, I mean, I think I'd be happy to be handed any assortment of characters and say, you know, well, that's the ones you've got to write about. And it would be a challenge, as far as I would see it, to make them, you know, more than maybe the sum of their original parts, without losing, you know, the essential something that made them what they were. So no, you know, I think any character really, it's just what you do with them. So I'd be happy to say, you know, almost absolutely any character, we can do something with that.
Because so many of these characters, at their heart, they're so very simple, because you had such a turnover of characters and comic books at the time. You know, the archive encompasses hundreds and hundreds of separate characters, all with their own unique gimmick, their own unique setting. So I guess, the like I said, there is a simplicity to them that makes it easier to move them around, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and I think, you know, we touched upon in the first Vigilant the idea of not all of them are happening in this reality, that, you know, something like the Esper Commandos are in a parallel world, that, you know, the White Eyes hail from another Earth. So I think, you know, there's ways and means here to say that, you know, yes, we've got our core, you know, again, in that kind of multiverse thing, we've got our core IPC Fleetway archive world, but within that orbit other worlds, and then characters like Adam Eterno can flit completely between those worlds. And so I think, you know, there's always, you know, we've got a demon dimension already. So I think we'll just, if it expands and if we need interconnectivity, sometimes it will be that, well, here's your parallel world. Here's a world where things went in a slightly different fashion, or time, you know, the Second World War, for instance, never ended or kept going. I think you could have fun with just exploring some of these other strips in the context of other realities.
And is there a character in the Vigilant that you would love to be able to spin off into their own series and do the kind of solo adventures of them?
Probably, if I was given carte blanche, I would do a little Leopard series, because, you know, in some ways he's the most solo of the characters. But even if we did a Leopard series, I would want to sort of keep him connected to, maybe not even the heroes, but, you know, the real characters like Pete Parker, like Mary Lanson. So it would be a Leopard series, but maybe featuring, you know, the alter egos of some of the hero characters from the Vigilant. So I'd want to keep it grounded within, so it would be a pure Leopard story, but still keep that sense of, this is a connected universe where these characters do not operate completely in isolation and can turn to each other for help if need be. So I think that would be the thing. I'd do a Leopard series if I could, but I would connect it to the Vigilant wherever possible.
Brilliant. And looking ahead, you know, we've talked about what's in store for the Vigilant. If we ever do a Leopard series, you'd like to be off and do that. What would you say to people who have no connection to these characters, didn't read them when they were younger, don't know who they are or their legacy? How would you sell something like The Vigilant to them?
I would say this is a team you can immediately jump in and join. You know, it doesn't require a lot of back knowledge whatsoever. You know, they are a team. They're assembled by a guy who feels he's burdened with this, you know, his grandfather's legacy. You know, they're very flawed. They're very entry level in terms of understanding who these characters are. You know, the why they come together is the grand overarching story, but essentially you are just joining a bunch of characters who are learning to be heroes, learning to work together as a team. And I think that gives you that sense that you're coming in at a nice early stage and there's not much to understand. They are heroes in their own little patch, or they live their own lives, but every now and then they're drawn together. And that's where the story starts. You know, it's connected to their home lives, their pasts, everything. But the story starts whenever they're summoned together. And I think you just get that entry level to the story that you can just join this exciting adventure and get to know the team as you go along, as much as they're getting to know each other every issue.
To make sure you pick up your copy of The Vigilant Legacy from all good comic book stores and newsagents. And thank you to Simon for chatting about his work with Simon, Jake and Will on what is an absolutely jam-packed issue. And I've read it, absorbed it. Can't wait for the next one. I'm going to have to. Don't forget to help spread the word about the work that we're doing with the old IPC archive, whether it's Vigilant or whether it's collected editions. Follow the Treasury of British Comics online at Brit Comics on Twitter, Treasury of British Comics on Facebook, and at Brit Comics on Instagram as well, where we don't just dive back into the archive, but also let you know about what's coming up in the future. The 2080 podcast will be back in 2 weeks' time, so we will see you then. Thanks again, Earthlitz, Blundig Verthrig.
Power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.